Nostalgia is a mind's trick. That's a lyric written by Taylor Swift in a song that has absolutely nothing to do with Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. But when I was searching for my hook for this intro, those words were the key to unlock my thoughts. Nostalgia is a mind's trick. Proverbial rose-colored glasses that influence your view towards the media of your childhood. The movies and TV shows that were masterpieces to your young brain. How many times have you recommended something to a friend, as adults, only for them to return to you with the phrases, "It was okay," or "I didn't really get it"? I've subjected today's guest, Craig McKenzie, to a few of my favorites, like Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas and The Dark Crystal, and my childlike enthusiasm definitely did not translate for him when he viewed through the eyes of an adult. It was very much the same for me, as I watched Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie, with my very grown-up eyes, long after my son had spent hours watching reruns of endless Power Ranger shows on Netflix in his toddler years. Up until this viewing, that was my entire knowledge of this universe, having been a high school student when the TV show premiered. Releasing on the big screen in the U.S. on June 30th, 1995, between the second and third seasons of the television show, it would debut at the box office in fourth place, but would eventually secure financial success, earning $66.4 million against its $15 million budget. Critics were predictably not impressed, but the film does hold an A- on CinemaScore, so the audiences who came out to see the Power Rangers on the big screen enjoyed it. Join us today as we discuss the dark and exploitive corporate underbelly behind the franchise, the questionable script choices, the interesting CGI, but most importantly, for those who appreciate it, the pure joy that comes with Morphin Time. Go, go, Power Rangers! I'm Violet Hammond, and this is Movieverseries. Welcome to Movieverseries. I'm your host, Violet Hammond, and this is where we celebrate and sometimes reevaluate some of the greatest movies ever on a significant anniversary. On this episode, we're discussing Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie, on its 30th anniversary. And here with me today is one of my co-hosts on Movieverseries, definitely a Red Ranger that I look up to. It's Ian Buckley. How you doing, Ian?
I'm doing well. But, you know, the color that I always associated with most when I was a kid watching Power Rangers was green, and they got rid of the Green Ranger so quickly. I know that Tommy stuck around, or was it Jason? I forget. Is it? No, Tommy is the White Ranger, right?
Tommy was the White Ranger, but he started as the Green Ranger. That's one thing I know. Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I was like, finally, my favorite color is being represented, and it was like, nope, it's gone. Sorry.
You know, I was going to ask everyone's favorite colors, but then I just decided not to because I knew it would give it away. Not like you didn't already know I was going to do this. Like, I mean, come on, please. And joining us today is a very special guest. He has the spirit of the Falcon, and I'd follow him anywhere. It's Craig McKenzie.
Ah, after 10,000 years, I'm free. It's time to conquer podcasting. I've got a million of
these. Welcome back. I know you do. Oh, I know you do. Welcome back to Movieverseries. You were here with us for Back to the Future this year. And a bit of a peek behind the curtain. It's been 11 months of asking if we can do Power Rangers, and we're getting it in right under the wire.
I wasn't waiting another decade to come on and discuss it. I just wasn't.
It had to happen. So you are going to be the person that I look to a lot during this because, as you will have all heard from my intro, this was a first-time watch for me. I don't really have a lot of Power Rangers knowledge, and I know that you do. You're definitely the expert. So Just a brief idea of the movie for anyone who's not familiar with Power Rangers. The TV show premiered in 1993, and it used stock footage from Japanese shows and the newly filmed footage with the American actors, who were non-union and horribly underpaid, which we're going to get to at some point, because I know I want to talk about that part. So the movie came out between the second and third seasons of the TV show, and help me, is it Saban or Saban?
Saban.
Saban Entertainment. So they were the masterminds behind this franchise, and then there were two more movies, endless spinoffs, toys, and crossover promotions, and billions of dollars in revenue. But the question we are here to answer today is, what does this film mean to you? And Craig, as our guest, please go first.
So this film does mean a lot to me. It's one of those formative experiences growing up. I was super into Power Rangers. And when the movie came out, I mean, I can't remember exactly the moment around when I saw it, but I must have been super excited to see it on the big screen and see all those favorite characters, you know, on the big screen. Even though I have Power Rangers at home, literally, I could watch it at home. It was made concurrently with the TV show, but it does mean a lot to me. It's a formative movie, and it's one of those, it'll never leave. It'll never be one that I'm ashamed of revisiting from time to time, because it just feels good.
I love it. Ian, what does this film mean to you?
So I definitely was into Power Rangers like the first couple of seasons that they were on. Then I kind of just sort of got into other things. It was never like top of mind for me, but I had a couple of friends who were really into it, and I was really into like playing with all of their toys, because of course, like, that's what I really associate with this franchise, are the like cool toys that like 8, 9, 10 year old Ian and his little friends were like really psyched to play with. And I definitely, rewatching this, I definitely watched this when it came out and had it, you know, we had it on VHS. I know my brother got into Power Rangers a little bit. This was probably his gateway drug. And I had, just to give you a sense of like when I dipped in and out of this franchise, when I started up the movie and I saw like that the Black Ranger was not black, and I saw that the Yellow Ranger was not an Asian woman, and I saw that the Red Ranger was just a different guy of uncertain ethnicity. And I was like, who are these people? I clearly dipped out like before that particular casting change went down. But like, I definitely remember watching this movie and enjoying the toys with my friends and, you know, being into it for the first couple of seasons that it was on.
Wow. Now, actually, is it too early to get into the fact that the casting change happened because of the salary disagreement? Like, I don't know if, especially Ian, since you didn't know that that's what wound up happening.
No, I found out in subsequent years, but as a kid, I was like watching this, like, I'm sure that I was watching this movie and being like, oh, I guess they just, like, I was old enough to know that like money was involved when it came to like making a movie and making a TV show. So in my mind as a kid, like, even if I hadn't kept up with like the current TV show cast, like, I probably just chalked it up to like, oh, some people just didn't sign up for the movie and some did, like, you know, and they recast the roles for the movie, whatever. I wasn't like that thrown as a kid, but, you know, watching it as an adult, I had just forgotten that.
I
had found out subsequently that, yeah, there was some like really crappy pay situations going on, and we'll get into that. But like, yeah, I was just unprepared for, oh, this is already a cast that I'm like half totally unfamiliar with.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Craig, did they bring in the other people before the movie on the second season, or was the movie the first time we saw the new Black Ranger, Yellow Ranger, and Red Ranger?
No, they swapped them out before the film. And back in the day, you just had no idea of what was going on behind the scenes in these things, because the internet didn't exist in the way that it does now. Yeah. So unless you were reading the actual physical trades like Variety and stuff, you wouldn't necessarily find that stuff out. And I'm assuming that Variety weren't reporting on what was going on behind the scenes on Power Rangers either. But
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where three cast members leave and they write it into the show, and then three new cast members show up and you just sort of roll with it. And because, mm-hmm. well, at that point, you're just kind of there for the stock footage, really. And, you know, the characters are, well, you have your favorite because you have your favorite color. The characters are very broadly drawn, but it's just one of those things that you just don't think about or certainly I didn't think about it at the time. I had no concept of how these things were made. So, yeah, these three characters are gone. That's a shame. But we've got three new characters. But, yeah, this was before the movie. I think the swap happens towards the end of season two.
Okay.
And then, obviously, it's between season two and three.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's very much like a kid's soap opera, both in terms of, like, how broadly drawn it is, but also in terms of, like, characters would just come and go with a sort of, like, handshake episode or two. Yeah. And then, like, oh, well, this character is going to go off and live out their life's dream doing this thing you've never heard them talk about before, and bye, see you later.
Yeah.
maybe exactly. They'll come back in a future series, you know, which happens sometimes.
If memory serves, the three characters that were written out because they were chosen to represent Angel Grove in the UN or something like that, it was something utterly nonsense like that. These high school kids are just getting sent abroad to,
but I think the N stood for ninja. I don't think it was the same UN.
No, it definitely was. I haven't seen the episodes in a while,
but... yeah, no, I'm sure you're right.
And all of the kids watching said, yes, of course, that's absolutely what happens at the United Nations. Yes. I mean, definitely.
It was just like Grandpa watching his stories. I had mine.
I'm not listening. It's just I'm waiting for them to morph. They haven't morphed yet. Hurry up.
Yeah, exactly.
Hurry up. Get to morphin' time. Where's that? Come on.
Where's that stock footage I've seen 50 times by now, but I still need to see it this time.
I need to see that perpetually erupting volcano that spawns the pterodactyl.
Yes, exactly. Oh man. Yeah, see, that was my main... I was in high school when Power Rangers started, guys, so I hadn't really seen any of this until my son was watching it on Netflix, one of the many spin-offs of this. I'm pretty sure one of the dinosaur ones was his favorite and he watched most of it, but
maybe the one that Tommy came back.
Yes, yeah. Tommy was definitely in it. And I was just about to say that made him go back to the first Power Rangers so that he could watch that 5-episode arc when Tommy came in as the Green Ranger. Yeah. So I remember sitting and watching that with him when he was a toddler. Yeah.
Tommy has been the Green Ranger, the White Ranger, two Red Rangers, and a Black Ranger, I think. I don't know if he's done anything else, but I'm pretty sure that he's done all those.
I mean, I definitely remember, like, being, like, a little kid. I mean, like, whatever, like, 7, 8, you know, and, like, the whole Tommy arc feeling, like, high drama to this 5 episodes. Kid. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
I was like, oh, my God, serialization, like, soap opera shit. It's just soap operas with, like, dorky ninja moves and fighting robots. Like, that's it. and they found a way to make Ultraman it as cheaply as possible. And, I lapped it up for a couple of years. And I just had to laugh watching it again. I'd forgotten so much of this stuff. And then I was like, oh, right. Like, I remember being a kid and thinking, like, this was really cool. That was really fun. And, you know, we'll get into the movie itself. Like, there were definitely things about the show that I missed not having in the movie, aside from the change in cast. We'll get into that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Tommy was the coolest thing ever when he was introduced. He had his costume had the shield. He had the coolest Zord.
He was the best. Cool. He was my favorite color. Like, I was down.
He made green cool living, because green is typically not everyone's favorite color. But everyone's like, I like this guy. He's so cool.
He was cool. I mean, a ponytail. It is fun.
I mean,
mm-hmm. And he started out as a bad guy and then became a good guy. So he had an arc and everything.
And like a secret bad guy. Like, you know.
Yeah.
There was like that element of drama.
Yeah. It was cool to see him in this. I had a very similar reaction to you, Ian, where I started the movie and I was like, oh, wait a minute. Okay. Oh, all right. Different people. I'm sure I'll figure out why when I start researching, but these are totally different people. So for anyone who hasn't seen this or possibly hasn't seen this in 30 years. There's, you know, there's a couple of different categories of people. The main plot deals with one of the best villain names I have ever come across in my life. Ivan Ooze. What a name. Oh my God. So he comes out of a giant egg and then he ruins everything. He trashes the command center. And that made me giggle, Craig, because I did re-listen to your Neil Before Pod episode on Power Rangers. And you do mention how there's one episode in the TV show where somebody gets into the command center and how that doesn't ever happen again until Ivan Ooze does it. And that was actually a question I had, and you answered it for me when I re-listened to your podcast.
In a different universe, because the film is in a different universe to the TV show.
Yes, which is another thing that blew my mind. I was like, oh, so same characters from the TV show, but this is like a different storyline.
Yeah. They do a variation of this storyline in the third season. So they get their ninja powers and those Zords and so on, but it happens differently. So there's no Ivan Ooze or anything like that. It's just every once in a while, it's like we really can't stretch the stock footage any further. So we need to come up with an excuse to use different stock footage. And it usually means we'll blow up the old stuff and we'll get new stuff.
I mean, that's what you do, right? You just burn the set down and you start over again. But the movie doesn't use any stock footage, right? They filmed everything for the movie.
For better or for worse. Yes, it's all new.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Yes.
Yeah, I have thoughts. But I did as a kid appreciate that element of like, I would imagine that after maybe several seasons, it would get old, but I like didn't stick with it long enough for that to happen. But like, I remember liking that at a certain point you would like hit a power level wall, and like, sure, it's an excuse to sell new toys and, you know, recast and recalibrate or whatever. But in my like little kid brain, it made sense to like, oh, eventually you'll like encounter an enemy that you can't overcome with your old tools. You need new ones, better ones. You need to upgrade. You need to like get more toys. You know. But yes. As a kid, like I appreciated that. You know, as
sales
an adult,
are slowing
I'm a little
down.
More cynical.
Oh my goodness.
Everyone has the old toys. We need them to buy new ones this Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to make a slight change to the costume so everyone has to buy new toys. Yep. That's the way it goes.
That's the way it goes. And we're going to keep this as cheap as possible, and we're going to keep this on the air for decades.
And we're going to make billions in merchandising.
Billions and billions and billions.
Thankfully, all of the actors and creatives involved will share in all of those projects. Oh.
Everyone was well compensated.
Everyone was very well compensated.
Oh, yes. And next up in Fantasyland, we will discuss, does this still hold up? So it's an interesting question. And I think it does kind of play into the special effects part of it. But does it still hold up? Is this still relevant? Would you recommend this to anyone who had never seen it as a kid? I think that's an important qualifier, because seeing it as a kid, you have eyes like we've all talked about. Like, I saw this through my son's eyes. The two of you saw this through your kids' eyes. But as an adult, would you ever say to someone, hey, you know what you should totally watch tonight on your movie watch? Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie. Like, would you do that?
No, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to people that weren't into it. But I don't think the film is for people that weren't into it as well. It is very fan servicey in the sense of, if you don't follow the show, then this doesn't help you at all. You start off, the Rangers are all fully established. You're just supposed to know how it all works. You have that opening crawl that doesn't really tell you very much. But broadly speaking, it's here's the characters, here's the setup. Get on with it. So it is very much for fans of the show. And I guess they took a gamble on the fact that the fan base was big enough to make it a smash hit. And it wasn't, because we have Power Rangers at home. And I guess not everybody's going to see it at the cinema. It did triple its budget, but I think they were hoping for a much larger success than that. But in terms of it holding up, there are things about it that I think are done better than some modern blockbusters. You have a lot of stunts. You have a lot of practical effects. You have practical costumes. The action is actually pretty well directed for the most part. They're in physical locations doing stuff. So there's a lot of stuff in there that's, yeah, they're not doing that anymore in a lot of these big budget movies. And here they are just doing it.
That's a really, really good point. That's very true. I mean, it does still look, it has a tangible quality to it that we don't really get with something that's filmed on a green screen.
Some of it does, yes.
Some of it does.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Ian, what do you think? Does this still hold up?
No. No, it's no good. No, I don't really think that it does unless you, like again, I could appreciate revisiting something that when it came out, I could engage with because I had the context from at least the first couple seasons of the show. It had characters that I still recognized. I was still kind of into the aesthetic, and you know, Tommy still seemed really cool to me. You know, it was just it was still coming out at the right age for me. I guess I was like 9 when this came out, 9 and a half, whatever. And so yeah, like it was fun to revisit, but this must have been so mystifying to my parents, who I know didn't participate in any of the television watching of this show. Like, if I wanted to watch Star Trek, my parents would watch that with me. If I wanted to watch this shit, my parents could not have been farther away in the house. It was all just noise and banality to them, I'm sure. And I cannot imagine what they made of this, because they must have taken me. Like, that must have happened. And maybe a sitter took me, I don't know. But they must have seen it at least once on home video with me and just been mystified, as I'm sure anyone unfamiliar with this franchise would be mystified. I just can't really imagine what they must have thought. And so, like, yeah, I wouldn't really recommend this to someone who wasn't already invested in the franchise. But it was like, it was a fun hang to revisit these characters and to see like some of the stuff that they did in this movie that I was like sort of wondering, huh, like was this some self-aware humor, like poking a little bit of fun at itself, like all the like whooshing noises that were added to like every small movement of the hands. Like at a certain point I was like, this must be intentional. Like you have to choose to put this sound in the sound mix consciously. So like this feels like you're having like a little bit of fun with this convention. And I was showing up for those moments, which I'm sure actually, you know, went over my head when I was a kid. So like there was definitely some stuff that I engaged with, like as a film critical adult, you know, on this program. But yeah, I can't really, like, I love Bo. I'm glad that we didn't make him watch this with us. I think he probably would have been unhappy.
See, I'm disappointed that Bo isn't here.
I know Australia you are, well. Buddy.
If there's anyone I wanted to inflict this film on, it was him.
Oh my goodness gracious. Well, he would have needed that opening crawl. Thank you for bringing up the opening crawl, because I feel like as we're sitting here talking about it, and Ian, you brought up like the parents who brought their kids to the movies, I'm almost 100% positive that crawl was for them, because they weren't going to have any idea what was going
no
on.
No idea.
And after the crawl, they still wouldn't. Like,
right.
Who's Zordon? Not who's Ivanhoe?
They're giving it to you like just enough for the parents who were not in the room when their kids were watching this or were doing their chores or something like that and had no idea what's going on. That, yeah, the crawl when the movie started really threw me. I'm like, what is this?
Well, it would have been my dad that took me to the cinema to see it. And I had Power Rangers on all the time, so he would have absorbed some of it just passively, I guess. I mean, I would have to ask him, but I guess he would be able to follow it in terms of knowing the setup.
Yeah, you would hope. But that was like the lifeboat they threw out to the parents. Yeah. That was so funny. Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, I'm looking at our next talking point, and I am drawing a big blank. So, Craig, I'm going to let you tell me what the themes of this film are.
I actually had a very long think about this. And then it turns out I didn't have to have a long think about it because the film tells you what its theme is. The theme is, Tommy says it in dialogue. He says, nothing is impossible. That is the theme. And it's, and if you look a bit deeper, because I'm talking about looking deeper into Power Rangers, but you can. But basically, it's don't accept defeat. Pick yourself up and keep going because there might be a greater power in your future.
Ooh.
And that speaks to the messaging of the show because the characters were always these paragons of virtue who preached about environmentalism, tolerance, and all these other things. You know, the Saved by the Bell portions of the episodes, they'd often be getting involved in some kind of cause at the school. It's like, how are these kids, how are these teenagers managing to do their classwork and think about applying for colleges and apparently becoming ambassadors for the UN and and doing all these causes that are around? So I think it very much leans into the way that the show projected these kind of positive role models. And it is all the things that we need to be pushing right now. And it definitely carries into this movie. So there you go.
I can't argue with that at all. That's actually perfect. I love it. Ian, do you have any more thoughts on that?
No, like Craig says, this is a movie that does sort of state what it has on its mind out loud for you. It announces it pretty loudly. And I think, Craig's on the money. Like that resonates with the kind of, you know, when there was a message to be had in the like bits of actual live action footage that they shot for the show, that was generally one of the themes. It was always like pretty, you know, straightforward in that regard. So that certainly carries through into the movie. It is interesting, you know, going from how I know they made the show to making the movie, like that must have been kind of an interesting problem for them to have to solve because like they had to do everything. Like they couldn't take footage from anything else. Like you have a budget of your own now, like, and you have to, you know, design the action sequences like from scratch, and you have the opportunity to, you know, build costumes and sets and everything yourselves and design things from the ground up. You know, obviously you're doing some of it based on what was already established in the show, but an interesting distinction that I was making watching the movie and thinking like, oh yeah, like that is one of the things that's different about this, the experience of consuming this story, this type of story as a movie, is knowing that they had to do everything themselves.
Totally.
And everything design wise gets a cinematic glow up. The costumes look great. The command center is all shiny and new. It's not as plasticky or cardboardy as it was in the TV show. The monster costumes all look great. I think the production design on this movie is excellent, and that's something about it that does hold up.
Yeah, I would not disagree with that. It definitely does look good, and the action scenes do look really good. So it was enjoyable to watch. I'm not going to sit here and say like I was miserable. Like I had a good time with it. I did, but I'm also someone who does enjoy media for children. I mean, I co-host a Disney podcast. Like it would be ridiculous for me to say I don't like this, you know.
Yeah. It is goofy, and it at times it feels like they're kind of leaning into that kind of knowingly, and I think that's when it works the best for me as a viewer, is when it feels like they're not taking themselves overly seriously. I think that, you know, speaking of performances, like Paul Freeman as Ivan Ooze does a really good job. It feels like he understands this very silly assignment and rises but takes that silliness seriously. And I appreciate the work that he's doing. He's clearly having fun with it. I remember when he popped back up, I remember thinking like, oh, right. Like as a kid, I thought this character was like maybe my favorite part of the movie. Like the one that engaged me the most. And I really do think it comes down to that character, you know, is well realized from a design, but also a performance perspective.
I am going to talk about Paul Freeman a lot later on.
Someone say the only actor in the movie.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
When I realized who it was, guys.
Right. That took me aback. Because I looked into it, of course, because I was like, yep. This guy's actually like kind of popping off the screen for me. And like, look.
Totally.
How could you not? It's a pretty low bar being set around you, let's be honest. But he came to play. And yeah, seeing like, oh, it's that actor, like, was really surprising.
It's not like Raul Julia in Street Fighter, who made a bit of a mockery of the material. He's fully engaged with the material.
He really is. He is giving it his all. He was giving 1,000% every frame of the movie. I love it. We're going to get into favorites later, but, you know, just letting you know, we're talking about him again later. What influence did this film have on culture and its medium? Well, if you were into Power Rangers culture, I'm sure this was huge. If you were not, I'm sure it kind of like went by. I mean, I, again, it's very difficult for me because I have 10 years on you guys. So this had, I didn't even know this was happening. But as a kid, when this movie came out, like, what was this like? Obviously huge.
Yeah, although I think it had kind of the opposite. It didn't really have a lot of influence. It didn't herald a cinematic era for the Power Rangers. This was it. And the next movie that they released in cinemas was the glorified pilot for Turbo, which was in continuity with the show. It was just they got a bit of extra money to make this pilot for, you know, the new season that ended up releasing, I think, in limited theatrical engagement. But I think this was a big push to, we're going to get this off the small screen and into theatres. Yeah. And it didn't quite pan out. So I don't think it had much influence, certainly not on the brand of Power Rangers, which stayed on television and has largely remained there ever since.
Right. So they never really revisit this alternate timeline?
No. Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see anything either. It was just, I saw, this is in a different universe, and then nothing. So they've never come back to this. This movie is like its own little time capsule of this one Power Ranger story, and then that's it.
Unless they've done stuff in comics or whatever, where there's been some crossover between timelines. I have no idea. I haven't fully invested in the more modern aspects of the franchise. Because it went on for decades after this.
There must be so much to get into. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah, I feel bad looking at this because it really had zero impact on me. But, it was only when I had a kid who was watching it on, you know, the reruns did it have any kind of impact on me.
It was a weird thing as well because it was made between seasons of a TV show. So it's not as if this is it. We're going on. It's not like in Star Trek, for example, where it's now we're on the big screen and we're not leaving. It was very much, and season 3 will be on in a bit after this movie comes out.
And then that'll be on. Yeah. Ian, you were going to say?
Right. I think for me, it was like, like you said, just the narrow slice of kids who were Power Rangers kids and their mystified parents who were going to have to shell out money for more toys. That was probably the biggest impact that it had. And yeah, like Craig said, it didn't really ignite the box office or culture at large. And so that was that for a while. And it never really became a marquee franchise, even though it had, you know, like a fairly successful recent reboot attempt theatrically that, you know, certainly like it made money, but it didn't make as much money as I think they hoped. And I think that there were a lot of behind the scenes financial reasons why that just didn't emerge as something that they wanted to invest in again. So I think it's back to being this kind of in-between franchise where they haven't quite figured out whether or not there's a way that it'll work on the big screen.
There's talk of things like a more serious TV reboot of Mighty Morphin. And the thing is, if it is very broadly drawn and it is very juvenile, I suppose is the best word I can think of to describe it. But the actual ingredients for something of depth are there. When they introduce the characters in the first episode, you have these kind of archetypes that are very easy to create conflict out of. So you have like Kimberly, who is the shallow rich girl, and Jason, who's this kind of alpha male type, and Billy, who's the nerd, and so on. You have this group of people that should not be thrust together when it comes to their social circles, but then they are, and they have to learn how to work together. If you were taking it seriously, you have the foundation for something really, really conflict-driven. And that's what the 2017 movie was dialing into a little bit. It didn't do it massively, but it was there.
Mm. There more than it was in the source material. Yeah, that's another one. I know I've seen it, but I haven't seen it for a while, the 2017.
I really like it. I think it's very good.
I know, we keep bringing up Krispy Kreme whenever we talk about that one. Well, here on Movieversaries, we like to ask if the movie is capital G great. So I think that this one might fall into the category that I created when we did Empire Records, which was capital G guilty, capital P pleasure. Or lowercase g good. So, Ian, what are you thinking?
I think it has great, I think we can all agree, CGI. The best part of the film by far.
2 years after Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Keep that in mind. This was, I think, like what was another big budget CGI forward movie that came? Anyway, it does not hold up on that respect. Like, technically, I think Craig was saying, like, you can say good things about, I think, the production value. You can say very bad things about the CGI. I think that the story is largely incomprehensible. If you're not like already a Power Ranger kid. So yeah, like I think pleasures aren't something to feel guilty about necessarily. So, you know, I want to echo what Craig said early about like he can enjoy this without guilt. And I think that's fair enough. If this is nostalgic for you, if this is something that makes you feel good, great, that's fine. But this is not good. It's not good. I just can't get around that basic fact. The acting is pretty bad. The script is pretty bad. You know, it's pretty bad. And I think there were opportunities for it to have been better, even with the constraints that it had. So I think I can't really give it, certainly not capital G great. I can't really give it lowercase g good. But pleasure question mark. And if the answer is yes, then, you know, go with God.
Craig, your rebuttal.
I don't have any guilty pleasures. I just have pleasures. There are things that I like, and I'm not ashamed of them. I wore this t-shirt that I'm wearing to work. It's a red Power Rangers t-shirt. So I wore it to work. No shame. Don't care. People can think what they want. I really don't care. And yes, I would never sit and argue that this film is good, but I also think that it has a place. And for me, that place is I was 7 years old in 1995, and I watched this movie, and I just don't remember my experience of watching in the cinema, but I imagine I must have liked it at the time. And it's something that I do revisit from time to time. You know, I've never, you get to that point where you grow up and you pretend that you don't like the stuff that you liked when you were growing up. And then you reach this point where you think, oh, why was I doing that? And I'll just like what I like. You know, it's the idea of you grow out of your action figures and then you grow back into your action figures at some point. At some point you loop around and you're a collector of action figures again. It's just the way life works when you're a nerd. Especially once you have your own disposable income, you'll just spend it on crap that you'll display and never take out of its box. It's the Lego movie principle, isn't it? You know, I like to build a Lego and I'll glue it together so it can't be changed. That's adulthood, apparently. But so I'm not going to say it's good. I wouldn't recommend that anybody that didn't grow up with Power Rangers watch it unless I want to torture them, which I'm into. I would be into just forcing a few people to watch this and be like, what the hell is this? And yeah, you kind of had to be there, I think is what I'm getting at. And I was there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that exactly. if you were, then, and you like it, then that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. The memories.
I have fond memories of being a kid watching this movie, playing with the toys with my friends, and mm-hmm. I'm sure driving my parents a little bit nuts when I asked for some of these things that I didn't
you have
get.
To get all of them
generally my
connect.
Friends who were the ones who got like I got other things. My parents were great about getting me the very much not cheap Lego stuff that I wanted, but the action figures that I was indulged in were like more G.I. Joes than Power Rangers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a line in a musical called The Fantastics that I have always used as one of my like character descriptions. The heroine of this musical is told she's childish and she says, "No, I'm childlike." So I will never look down on anyone who still enjoys something that they liked when they were a child, because it's pretty much my entire personality. So I did enjoy this, and I can imagine seeing it through the eyes of people who do love it. I can see the reasons why you love it. It was one of the things I said to Ashley when we did Tank Girl. I said, this was a first time watch for me. It's your favorite movie, but I could see in every frame why you love it so much. Yeah. And that's why I love doing this. I love talking to people about the things that they're passionate about. So this was definitely worth talking about.
How much of modern media is just mining that nostalgia everybody has for these things that they grew up with? All of it, pretty much, at this point. And that's why they keep trying to make a reboot of this work in some way. Because I talked about how there's the implied depth in the way that the characters' top line traits are. And it's someone can potentially reboot it in a way that accentuates those. And it's almost like we're making this way the way that you remember it, not the way that it actually was. But anybody that says they're, oh yeah, I'm not into this thing that I used to be in, it's no, you are. And at some point, some media conglomerate is going to exploit that, and they're going to bring that back, and then you're going to be right back there.
Yeah. Just keep going back to the graveyard of franchises and trying to find something they can bring back to life. Oof. Well, we have come to a section that we have scratched the surface of a bit. So let's get into the shortcomings of the Power Rangers movie. We've brought up CGI. It does feel to me, it felt like a very long episode of the TV show, which I'm sure is kind of just where they were at and what was going to happen. And the performances of everyone except Paul Freeman, I probably throw in the shortcomings category. Ian, do you have any other thoughts? I know we've talked about CGI.
Yeah, the CGI, especially when it came to the Zords, like I get, you know, going back to what I mentioned, some of the challenges of making this a film were the show used all this existing footage, like it already had been made and it was all practical. Like, yes, it was cheap looking. I'm sure as a kid it probably looked better. I'm sure if I look back on those early seasons I'd be like, Jesus Christ. But I connect.
Why were they on a rooftop and now in the desert? What's going on?
But like, as silly as it sounds, like I mentioned my connection to this show several times being as it related to the toys as well. And like, I can connect that cheap looking Zord on screen with this like plastic one that I can play with in a very like real way that I just cannot do with the CGI slop that they were throwing out at in this movie. Mm. Like, I can't connect in my head with, like, a physical object in the world in a way that I could watching the admittedly cheap practical footage that they were using for the shows. Like, to me, it was, ironically, I'm sure that they paid a lot more for that CGI than they ever did for the footage from whatever shows they were ripping that footage from, if they even paid for it. But I just couldn't connect with it the way I could with like practical effects, even cheap ones.
So incongruous as well, because the city miniature that they built is great.
Right, Right. They do all this practical set design because, like, that element of the sort of CGI revolution hadn't yet taken hold, where we're constructing entire environments in computers. Like, they still had to build these environments, and then they're just slapping on the, like, worst mid-90s CGI you can imagine, like stuff that would be embarrassing to put in a TV show, and in some of these shots, just really bad.
Yeah, although they do have the Zords moving in ways that the models and guys in suits couldn't.
Sure, and like that's
the fidelity,
obviously, the trade-off. But even from a design perspective, it was just, it all just looked kind of muddy. Like, for all the complaints that people have about, you know, the CGI in Marvel movies, like, go back and watch this shit, man. Stuff has gotten so much better.
It's now looping back to being worse again. It's just a massive cycle.
God. Well, Craig, what's on your shortcomings list?
It's difficult because I think that the shortcomings are pretty obvious. I'm going to go with the script / storytelling, because I can see where they were trying to get at things. So, for example, you have the concept of them all being powerless and having to solve a problem using their skills and everything they've learned.
Yes.
And then you have this whole thing about, we're in a race against time to save Zordon because he's lying dying in his weird crystal bed thing. And
correct.
For some reason, when you destroy his the pillar that he's in, he's just a person. And he's there. Let's just not explain that. But you don't really get any sense of they're all that concerned. You have that moment where Tommy and Kimberly have a brief heart-to-heart on the rocks, but it's just, I was thinking about Zordon. Yeah, me too. Anyway, over here. And
yes,
here's the bird guys. Let's fight them for a bit.
And were they together on the show?
There was hints. I mean, it's a show for, you know, it's a show for 8-year-old boys. So it's like romance. We're not into that. We don't want it.
Yeah, but I felt like I was like, there's so much subtext here. Like, what is happening with the two of them? All right, because I wasn't sure if it was something that happened on the show that I just didn't remember, or the two of them, whenever there was dead air, they would just give each other a meaningful glance and then move on. That was killing me. I thought that was hysterical.
Yeah, I think there was hints at it in the show, but they never dive too far into
it. Because,
again, 8-year-old boys were not interested.
There in the show, like, you know, they would exchange glances. Like, when Tommy came to town, like, there was definitely something between them.
Yeah.
But, like, nothing that ever, you know, graduated to on-screen romance, I don't think.
No, we weren't going to have an episode about the Power Rangers date or anything like that. That wasn't happening.
No.
No, not really.
No. We can talk about favorite facts, but since this is the part where we talk about behind-the-scenes story, this is kind of where I would like to get into the pay disparity, since it did have quite a bearing on who was in the movie in terms of when the three actors who went and tried to renegotiate their contracts failed. That's when they were recast, and they had up until that point been in the movie, or were told that they were going to be in the movie. So we could have seen a much different Power Rangers movie if all of the actors had stood together and asked for a contract renegotiation.
It wouldn't have been that different. It would have just been three other guys saying the same dialogue.
But the people, in my heart, the people who had worked hard and were terribly underpaid for a season and a half of television would have at least been able to take their parents to the premiere of a movie that they were starring in.
They'd have to buy their own ticket, but yeah, they would have been able to go.
Yes. The video link that you sent me, Craig, I'm going to put in the show notes, because it is very, it was very educational to me, because I think that that is the first time that they really did come out and explain what happened. And Ian, this is, I'll send you the link to you so you can see it. It's the original Red Ranger and Black Ranger. And originally the actors had talked together about renegotiating together and standing as a team. And then the people who remained with the show broke with them and didn't go with them. So those three actors essentially just got run off the show for daring to speak up.
It was a divide and conquer situation. I think they snuck in and offered the other three a little bit more money. And then that isolated the other three who were then just fired. I want more money. No, you're fired. You're replaceable.
Yeah. And it's just unbelievably sad that these people were making, at this point, billions of dollars on TV and toys and all of this, and they couldn't pay these people fairly. They were doing the show non-union. The Red Ranger signed a contract when he was 17. He had no lawyer present or his parents. Like, it was
crazy,
really underhanded what was going on. Yeah. And they were being exploited. So it really kind of put a sour taste in my mouth having watched the movie and thought, okay, that was kind of fun and harmless. And then you sent me the link to that video and I felt really bad about it.
It taints it somewhat knowing that that was going on in the background of this thing that I loved so much and that was front loading all these messages about tolerance and stuff like that. But interesting hearing them talk about how they made something like $700 per episode.
Yeah.
And they would do a convention over a weekend and they would make over a season's worth of pay in one weekend.
Right. Yeah.
And apparently the producers hated the fact that they did that because they were, I guess they were getting a taste of what they could have.
Yeah. Because it was easy to keep them down when they didn't have an idea of what it was like out in the world. They were getting out into the world and seeing what the draw actually was.
Yeah.
And then it was harder to manipulate them.
And the thing is, that continued for so long. There was a period of time when the show was in production. It was owned by Disney for a while. And it was in production in Australia because they didn't have to pay the non-union Australian actors or actors that lived in Australia. I don't think they were all Australian, but Rose McIver, for example, who was in iZombie, she was the Yellow Ranger in one of the series. And it was about making it as cheaply as possible out in Australia where they didn't have to conform to these rules. So it has always existed on this bedrock of exploitation.
Yay! Yeah. Buy these toys.
Yeah, talk about raping my childhood.
not great.
No.
It is a downer. It really does kind of bring the whole thing down. It's really sad because for these people, a lot of them, this was like the biggest thing they ever did. And they were horribly underpaid for it. Yeah. It's a real shame. Are there any happy behind the scenes stories or facts we want to share? I just thought it was important to get that out there.
I don't think this is necessarily a happy one, but I think this story is very funny. For the ending scene where they were watching the fireworks display, they didn't want to pay for extras, so they put an ad in this local Sydney newspaper saying, come to the harbour and meet the Power Rangers. They'll be watching this fireworks display. So they just got extras for free while all the actors were there, and they filmed it.
They're diabolical. They really were. Yeah. Oh my God. That is insane.
Yeah.
You know, like, I shouldn't be surprised though. They really were. Like, just the worst.
I do think it's funny that a chunk of the budget is eaten up by this weird, unnecessary skydiving scene at the beginning. It's almost like Power Rangers has a budget for the first time ever. Let's go skydiving. Bring the camera. We'll do something with
it's
all these high school kids that get to go skydiving.
It felt like it felt like a TV idea. It felt like, oh, we've got this opportunity for like a cold open where I guess there aren't any stakes because like nothing goes wrong. They aren't like it felt like it was missing a beat even. It felt like if this had been a scene in the show, it would have been their first encounter with some of like Rita's henchmen, like would have attacked them while they were skydiving. And you would have like a fight in the air, skydiving. Like that could be cool. That could be exciting. That could be cinematic. Instead, it's just let's form a ring, guys, and say how great we are. Like, what the fuck is this?
I don't know.
The funniest thing is when Bulk and Skull leap out of the plane, they're falling for so long somehow that the Rangers have had time to get out of their skydiving outfits, get changed, and go blading.
Yes.
And they're still descending.
They're still flying through the air. Yeah. I know. And that they try to cover it by having the pilot say, you guys have to get out of here because we're going to run out of fuel. Like, but But still, like, don't hit me with that logic. This is still silly.
All these high school kids skydiving unaccompanied by any instructors is very funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure. I'd love to see the rider their parents had to sign for that, right? It's just like in Harry Potter. You need a permission slip to go to Hogsmeade, but, like, we'll try to kill you with the animal class, but it's okay. you don't need a permission slip for that.
And, of course, Tommy needs to be on a surfboard in the air because he's just the
coolest. Of course.
Yeah. He's just that fucking cool.
Yeah.
He really, truly is. He's the best. Ian, do you have any facts about the Power Rangers movie?
No. Paul Freeman was Ivan Ooze. That was the fact that I uncovered watching this, because I was like, who plays Ivan Ooze? Because as a kid, I know I didn't care. And like you said, the internet wasn't really what it was now.
Yep.
So I just didn't know that until this week.
Until this. This was the thing that you learned, and you're better for it.
Yep.
Every viewing of Raiders of the Lost Ark will be different from now on for the rest of your life, because we did Mighty Morphin Power Rangers in the movie, and you know that Belloc is
gives
Ivan
me
Ood.
An appreciation for the guy's range. I mean, he really could do it all.
Yeah. No, I mean, I said I'm going to be talking about him more. You get ready.
Yeah, the movie soundtrack is incredible as well. The selection of songs that are played in the movie is just straight up 90s bangers one by one.
Yeah, they did. Some of that budget money definitely went toward the soundtrack.
Yeah. The score is kind of disappointing, though. The TV show was scored by a guy called Ron Wasserman, and he was very much into the rock soundtrack that really made that stock footage pop. But they didn't hire him for that. And apparently he wrote a song that threw shade at the movie for not hiring him.
That's a good one. Yeah. I like that. And again, justified. He should have thrown shade, because that's messed up.
Yeah, he should have scored the movie. Because the thing is, the score isn't all that memorable, apart from the theme that's played sometimes. Not the Power Rangers theme, which is only played, I think, once. But there's an actual, like, the theme when they restore Zordon, for example. That comes up a couple of times.
Well, it's that time for favorite moments and lines, scenes, characters, if you have. I have a couple written down, but I can't wait to hear what you guys think. Ian, why don't you hit me?
I think the thing that I appreciated the most on this rewatch was definitely, besides Paul Freeman's performance, which I think we will talk about at a little greater length, was what Craig mentioned earlier, like the production design in kind of, like, for me as a kid, remembering, like, oh, like, they've just put this, like, big budget sheen on all these, like, familiar settings and the costumes and, you know, like, clearly not grainy, shitty footage of, you know, these fighting scenes. It's actually like Hollywood stunt people doing the stunt work, and you've got actual costume designers, like, building these costumes, and, you know, just like going back in time with this, you know, and like going back to that, like, appreciation of, like, oh, I'm getting to see, I don't know who these characters are, but I'm getting to see a lot of, like, familiar faces that I grew up with, like, on the big screen for the first time. And, like, being able to tap back into that feeling is something that I appreciate on this rewatch.
Definitely. Craig, what are your favorites?
Well, definitely shout out the stunts and fight choreography. A couple of the actors did most of their own stunts. Jason David Frank, for example, he did most of it. Right. And yeah, I love the production design of it. I feel like you could put those Power Rangers costumes in a film now and they would still look great.
Yeah.
I think the detail is as such. It's one of those, they look so reminiscent of the TV spandex costumes as well, that, you know, one of those I was thinking, why didn't they just give them those costumes on the TV show after this? But in terms of, you know, when you put someone into the movie costume, it would be more involved than, well, the stock footage. But eventually they did start filming their own fight scenes and so on when they got the costumes from the Japanese effects houses, I guess. So that's definitely worth shouting out. You know, some of the the practical stuff, like that practical skeleton Stegosaurus thing on the alien planet. That looks really cool. It's a really cool puppet thing. Yeah, there's basically all the stuff that Power Rangers was known for, I think they largely nailed in this. Like, even as bad as it looks, I think the Zord battle is quite dynamic. Like, if you can put on some blinkers and imagine it looks better than it is, I think it's actually quite a creative sequence.
Yeah, that was fun. Definitely like that. My favorite, I texted you about this. So when they show up on the planet and the cloak comes off and that lady shows up like some kind of like refugee from the Xena Warrior Princess set, I lost my mind.
I had no memory of Green Warrior Princess. When she showed up, I was like,
right?
I do not remember this.
I loved every second she was on screen. This
all
is
90 of them?
Yes,
like that,
all 90 seconds. Oh, it made the whole movie. Yes, this is Gabrielle Fitzpatrick, Australian legend. Bo, we have an Australian legend in this movie as Dulcia.
Yeah. Another fact about the film is she had to go, she had to come off the film for a bit because she had an ovarian cyst, and they cast someone else and filmed a bunch of footage, and then they decided once she got better, right, we're just going to bin all this footage and the original can come back.
No, because honestly, she was giving it her all too. She's great. Other than it's like Paul Freeman, Dulcia, and then like everyone else is like on the next level. Like, I actually loved her. I thought she was great.
I love that they start her off as if she's going to be somewhat antagonistic. And then it's like, we're looking for the great power because Zordon's in trouble. It's like, Zordon, you know Zordon. Come on, I'll show you where the great power is. And then conflict over.
Exactly. It's like, oh, you know my bro. Okay, let's go take care of this. Yeah. And yeah, she is the one who gives everyone their new animal spirits. And I have to say, my number one favorite part of this movie was all of the shtick with the frog. I thought that was so cute. That's the cutest thing.
Apparently. It wasn't in the original script,
Really? All of that stuff with the frog, that was there for the girls because it was so cute. It was adorable. Yes, the frog that we kiss. I was like, yes, exactly. I was already there. They didn't need to lead me down that path. I said, yes.
It's all the grandiose descriptions of the other animals. Right. And then he gets, like a froggy kiss who turns into a prince. Like, well, I'm not a mighty ape or whatever else.
Missing the point.
But that makes him feel better. Yeah. He has this cute little look on his face like, oh, okay. And I was like, oh my gosh, Precious, you're so cute. I loved that. And yeah, once again, I have to say, Paul Freeman was unreal. Unreal in this movie. I will never, like, Belloc was one of my nightmare characters when I was growing up. I was always terrified of him in Raiders of the Lost Ark. So to know that, at like, maybe, you know, then he was in Power Rangers as this unbelievable scenery chewing villain, just giving it his all. I love it.
Here's a lesson from the movie. If a stranger comes up to you in the street and offers you ooze, don't take it.
Just don't take it.
Do not take it.
Yeah.
No,
sir, I don't
I love
like
that he's although, like, I'm a master of disguise. And then you see him in his disguise where he's giving out the ooze, and that's worse than how you look.
It is, yes. It's 1,000% worse. And it looks just like slime. I mean, you can still buy slime in stores, and kids are still obsessed with slime. So I was like, oh, ahead of its time. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, it literally looks just like the slime packages. They not that I want to give anything to the Power Rangers people because they don't deserve anything. They've been terrible, the people in charge. However, the slime people do kind of owe them a little bit of money.
You could buy branded ooze at the time as well, and you could buy everything associated with this movie.
Of course. So we're at that point, boys. It's time to talk about the MVP of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the movie. I have one name written down. I'm wondering what everyone else has written down. So Craig, hit me up.
I'm gonna let other people have the obvious one. I'm gonna give it to Jason David Frank, even though he's not the best actor, obviously, but his martial arts was his thing. He was the ambassador for Power Rangers throughout until he died fairly recently. Tragically, RIP Jason David Frank. But he was so enthusiastic about the franchise always. He would stop and talk to anybody about it. Whenever you see him interviewed about it, he's just so delighted. He's stuck with it. He kept coming back to it. And, you know, he wasn't coming back for the money.
Right.
Yeah.
he used it to support his own martial arts career and get people interested in proper martial arts, not just about fighting and kicking people and so on, about the disciplines. So definitely have to give it to him. He's, you know, he was amazing as Tommy. And yeah, not the best actor, but when you're that age, you just don't care. And he just embodies Tommy anyway.
Yeah.
I don't think he has a terrible amount to do in this movie.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, like when he came onto the show, like you could definitely tell that like there was a bit of a charisma gap between some of the other performers and him. And like that went a long way to like, you know, he might not have had the acting chops, but he had like a baseline level of, and it probably was his genuine enthusiasm for that side of things that was coming across, you know, much in the same way that I'm obviously like Bruce Lee was in and Jackie Chan are in like a different like ballpark in terms of their skills and abilities and as actors as well. But like that just like energy, that just sort of natural charisma like bursting out of you, like you know, he doesn't have like the same well of that those guys did, but like he's got a little bit of it, and certainly that came through in the show, and I think it comes through a bit in the movie too.
In terms of the original cast, it's Amy Jo Johnson Kimberly who's the most successful. She went on to actually become an actor and be pretty good in things, plus she's had a fairly decent directing career. And it's good to see that the director Brian Spicer's career wasn't ruined by this movie as well. He's incredibly prolific on TV.
So, that's good.
Yeah, it's not a Jonathan Frakes Thunderbird situation.
Aw.
You'll never work in this town again after making
this.
Oh,
no.
Don't know why, it wasn't his fault, but Brian Spicer, if you look up his IMDb after this movie, it's like episodes of the Millennium X-Files spinoff and everything. He's just done so much.
Yeah, I did look him up and I was like, wow, this guy is busy.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's got a lot going on. Yeah, which is good. We like when people work. Ian, who is your MVP?
It's got to be Freeman for me.
He's mine too. I know. Yeah. I mean, it has to be him. Like, shout out to Dulcia, but yeah, like Paul Freeman is just on another level in this, really and truly.
Yeah, like whenever there's a performer having a lot of fun with the role, you know, it makes a big difference. And you can just tell that he was having a lot of fun.
Yeah, I wish he had had more interactions with the actual Rangers. Because he just doesn't really have any.
Yeah.
He just kind of sits around and mugs.
I don't know if they maybe didn't have him for very long on the shoot. Like, maybe they, like, for production reasons, just had to kind of shoot out his block of scenes and then, you know, see you later. But, you're right. Given that he was the sort of the X factor, he was the thing that was new about, you know, making this movie, having him interact with the familiar faces from the show makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that he's a bit of a benevolent slave owner, as in he lets them wear their hard hats when they're digging up his stuff.
Oh, yeah. Because safety first, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Safety first before I'm going to send you to plummet to your death.
Yeah.
That was, as they are zombified walking toward the edge of the cliff, that was some dark... Yeah. Dark shenanigans.
You have the Fred character. It almost feels like this guy's going to be a Power Ranger one day. He's this very active young kid who is able to take control of a situation and help solve the problem. It just feels like if they had made this a trilogy, by the third one, he'd have replaced one of the Rangers or joined the team in some way.
He definitely would have. I did. I really liked that kid. That kid was, he had a presence. He was fun. I liked his scenes and I liked how he saved all the parents, the 30 of them that were there for that part.
I like when his dad is talking to Tommy at the start and it's like, yeah, maybe in 10, 15 years you can do this skydiving. And they're probably like, Tommy is supposed to be a teenager and he's probably the same age as the guy playing the dad.
Right.
Yes.
It's like, this is reading more father figure than brother.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. For sure. Well, Craig, do you have any final notes on Power Rangers today?
I just want to comment on some of the, let's say, fan service. There's the bit where they go into the Zords and Kimberly says, "Nice stereo," which is what she said when she went into the Zord in the first episode of the show. So she says that. You have the classic Zordon thing of, oh yeah, Ivan Ooze, I knew about him all along. Here's all the information you need. Didn't tell you about him before, even though he's in the town. And I stupidly left his death machines buried right next to him.
Mm-hmm. He's buried in an egg right next to everything he needs to take over the world.
Yeah. There's not enough Bulk and Skull in this. I always liked Bulk and Skull. There's just not enough of them.
Yeah. They help the kids at the end, but yeah, they jump out of a plane in the beginning and then they come back like 85 minutes later.
Yeah, they disappear. Yeah.
And their introduction doesn't really... you know, if you were watching this and had never seen the show, like, you wouldn't know that the dynamic is that, like, they're the bullies. Like, they're the town bullies. I mean, I gather that their dynamic changes over the course of the years, but, like, that at this point, they're still, like, bullying people, and, like, why are they all... You know, they're sort of like gentle adversaries, and your first introduction to them, they're all on a skydiving trip together, and there's not a whole lot of bullying going on.
No, not at all.
That does set up the conveniently placed comet at the end, though. It's like, this comet's coming overhead in a couple of
days. It does.
Oh my God.
It seemed extraneous at the time, but
that's just the genius of the screenplay, man. Chekhov's comet.
Well, I love that the Megazord's emergency button is a kick in the nuts button. Yeah. Like, you have to break the glass.
Oh my God. Yes. Thank you for bringing that up, because that was another thing that I actually lost mind at. I could not believe that was there. That was funny. Yep. Gotta hand it to it. That was funny.
And all the puns during the fights as well.
Yes. All the puns.
But that's the thing. You need to inject the character's personality, such as it was, into these fight scenes, because you don't see their faces. So, Ian, those exaggerated movements you were talking about, it's a 90s video game, PlayStation era video game thing. The sprites weren't all that detailed, so you have them do very exaggerated movements in order to understand how they might be feeling about something. And you get that with when they're in the ranger costume. So they throw in a bunch of crappy puns while they're fighting, so that you get a sense of, yes, it's not just stunt people fighting, it's these people.
Right.
Yes. I am a fan of a pun, so I know there were several that definitely made me chuckle. So
things like you ooze, you lose, or talk about splitting headaches, stuff like that.
Yep. It was fun. It was good. It's ripe for a drinking game. This would be really good with a drinking game.
Oh yeah, it's good fun, and
I'd be down for that.
I think Power Rangers is very popular among stoners, especially when it went on Netflix. It was just let's just get baked and watch this, and it will suddenly make sense.
Yeah. And because you have a whole other level unlocked when you're watching it like that. Ian, do you have any final thoughts on Power Rangers?
No. You know, fun to revisit, but probably won't again, personally.
Unless I start a drinking game.
Sure. Yes.
Then we're going to do group watch.
That would be fine.
And,
Yeah,
that we're allowed to do.
And get some ooze-themed cocktails.
Oh, see, here we go. All right, now we're spitballing. We're coming up with things. I'm a fan. Oh man, this is going to happen.
Zord-themed cocktails. You know, this is the frog cocktail or whatever. I don't know. There's all sorts there.
The frog was my favorite, so it's getting represented somewhere. That's for sure.
The thing is, I'm not so hot on these Zords. I prefer the old, I'd say, dino Zords, but a saber-toothed tiger is not a dinosaur.
No,
a mastodon isn't. Is not a dinosaur.
Is not a dinosaur, no.
But, there were the dino Zords. But I don't think these ones were as distinct. Like, when Tommy gets the falcon, it's like, well, they already have a flying one. He's supposed to get a big, cool one. And it's... the monorail track leaves a very Falcon Zord-sized hole.
Yes. When Thank goodness he could fit in there.
Yeah.
Although I'm not sure that would work. I don't think the monorail would just glide right over the way that it did. It would derail and kill all those kids.
That was the least realistic part of the whole movie.
The least realistic part. Yeah. So yeah.
And that's saying something.
I wasn't fussed about those particular Zords. Tommy had the Tiger Zord at this point, which was way cooler.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And his talking sword. So it was amazing.
His sword talked?
Yeah, it was called Saba, and it was a talking sword. It was his partner. They would have a chat once in a while.
Whoa. The lore goes deep with Power Rangers. Oh,
it's intricate. Yeah, it really is.
The lore goes deep. Well, boys, I'm very glad we go Power Ranger today. I'm very glad we talked about it. This was definitely something to talk about. I'm glad we watched it. I'm glad we did it. It's 30 years old, which is insane, but
I know.
It's an anniversary worth marking, and I'm glad we did that today.
I'll be back in 2 years for the 2017 movie.
Oh my God. Okay, hon.
Okay.
Oh my God. I love it. Well, Craig, if anyone wants to continue the conversation, where can they find you online?
You can find me on Neil Before Blog, so neilbeforeblog.co.uk. You put it into the internet and socials, you'll find it. As was mentioned earlier in this episode, or maybe not, I can't remember if we're recording at the time, there is a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers episode where we discussed the TV show, several episodes of the TV show, where I was very enthusiastic. One of the other contributors was less enthusiastic, and the other was somewhere in the middle. So that you can listen to that, or there's more recent stuff. You can listen to a monthly news podcast, deep dives on various things. I do reviews and all that stuff. So mainly on there, and Ian will go into more detail about this. But also we are on We Are Starfleet, which is a Star Trek podcast. But Ian can go into that more detail if he wants.
Yes, Ian, where can we find you online? Yes,
as Craig said, We Are Starfleet is our Star Trek discussion one of the Star Trek discussion podcasts here on the network. We're going to be ramping up some in-between season content coming up, focused on things like we did an episode for First Contact Day where we talked about the concept of First Contact. We're going to continue to explore the Prime Directive in more detail. But coming up next, we're going to be kind of previewing the newest Star Trek show, Starfleet Academy, which is going to be coming out early next year, and episodes looking ahead and back at the concept of Starfleet Academy will be coming up over the next couple of months. And you can also hear me on Illumination Above All, which discusses the Apple TV show Severance, and Collector's Commentary, which is a show that focuses on physical media releases. We are about to record an episode focused on Dark City, which I'm very excited to talk about. Yeah, so that's what I've got going on.
Cool. And as always, for me, you can find me on my Linktree. It's linktr.ee/violet.h.310. And on there, you can find the links to this show, to Movieversaries, and also to Three Circles, the Disney podcast I co-host with Jeff Owen, and all of the other podcasts that are kind enough to have me on so I can blather my nonsense. And at this point, I would love to say thank you so much to both of you for joining me today, and to everyone who has tuned in. We very much hope you've enjoyed the show, and if you have, please subscribe to Movieversaries and give us a rating and a review wherever you can. While you're here, you should check out the show notes. You'll find links to all the things that we were doing, as well as a link to the Discord, where you can come and have a chat with us. And thanks again for your company, and see you for the next installment of Movieversaries.
May the power protect you.
Amen.
Oh my gosh.